On today's Visual Studio Toolbox, we're going to talk EF Core with Jeremy Lickness. He's going to show some demos and give you a taste of the things he'll show at his upcoming Dev Intersection talk. Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Jeremy Lickness. Hey, Jeremy.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
So Jeremy is a PM at Microsoft working on Entity Framework Core, and that's what we're going to talk about today. He is also, along with myself and various other luminaries, a speaker at the upcoming Dev Intersection conferences. So we're going to do a little bit of an ad for that right now. So if I switch over to slides, here we are. Dev Intersection has been around for quite some time. And it is a great event. Lots of Microsoft people show up. Lots of third-party speakers show up. And the show is back this year in Orlando from June 8th to the 10th. And then also in Las Vegas, December 7th through the 9th. The June show is going to be a hybrid event. Some people will show up in person. Some will attend virtually. And then by December, it's all in person. So if you want to learn more about this and see who the speakers are and the types of sessions there are, come to devintersection.com. You can use the discount code DEV21, save some money. The December show will feature a large number of keynotes from folks like Scott Guthrie, Scott Hunter, Julia Louisen, Charles Lamanna, and others. This is, I think, the bigger of the shows. So if you're going to come to one in person, you know, maybe you choose this one, but if you don't want to wait, definitely want to see you in Orlando. Either way, we hope you come and join us. Jeremy will be there speaking on Entity Framework Core, and that's what we're going to talk about today on Toolbox. I'll also be there. I'm giving a talk on Graph, giving a talk on Git, and then I'm doing a full-day workshop on how to build mobile apps with Xamarin. So that should be interesting. And again, use the discount code DEV21. We'd love to see you there, whether it's in person or virtual. It's a really good show. I think you'll learn a lot. So that is the shameless plug. And with that, Jeremy, you're going to be speaking on Entity Framework Core. So tell us a little bit about Entity Framework Core and also give us a taste of the types of things people would see in your talk. Were they to attend either live or virtually?
Sure thing. So EF Core, for those who aren't familiar with it, is I like to call it just a data access API. You'll hear people call it an object relational mapper, and I put relational in quotes. That's because its function is to map between your domain objects and your application and the database backend. But it's not only relational. It started out focused on relational with support for SQL Server. But Entity Framework Core has what's called a provider model. And it allows you to plug in adapters, if you will, to different databases. Mm-hmm. And while we support SQL, MySQL, there's a third party for Oracle, there's PostgreSQL. We recently added support for Azure Cosmos DB. So that takes the relational out. That's a document database, of course. But what it allows you to do is, we hope, program very naturally with your C# classes and make the heavy lifting of all that translation and mapping and marshaling back and forth for the database dialect. It'll handle that behind the scenes for you.
Right. And then you don't have to learn Transact SQL or any other SQL language. You basically just talk to things as if they're classes.
Pretty much. You talk to things as if they're classes. And the whole design of the framework is to give you as much magic and convention as is possible to make life easy to stand up an application, but also give you access to the underlying database. So It never forces the abstraction. In other words, if you need to get down to the connection level or the DB command level, you can do that. So you can take care of that 80% with the conventions that are out of the box. And then when you hit those 20% edge cases, we have those dials and levers to manage those.
Right. So if people are familiar with the Entity Framework, how hard is it to move to Entity Framework Core?
That's a great question that comes up. And that's actually a theme for what I'll be covering at my upcoming talk with EF Core 6. So the answer is, and unfortunately it depends. There is a EF 6. EF 6 is the last version on the .NET framework, right? Mm-hmm. And that will run on .NET Framework and .NET Core. So we have a path to get you onto .NET Core using EF 6. Mm-hmm. What was missing in EF Core is EF Core was a purposeful decision to re-architect the app, take advantage of modern programming techniques, paradigms, et cetera. And as a result, because it was rebuilt, not all of the EF6 functionality got into it. Mm-hmm. As of Entity Framework Core 5, most of those features have been addressed. I'll actually show some of those, give you a taste of that today. Okay. With a little demo that I have. But EF6, one of the work items that we're focused on is one of the things that was falling behind was some of the query support. So there were just certain types of complex queries that could be run in EF6 and not EF Core. And that support's being built out. So the goal for EF Core 6 is feature parity with EF6. That's not confusing at all. But so the answer is you should have a pretty direct path. And if you found limitations in EF Core 5, we hope that we remove most of them in EF Core 6. And the only other big item is EF6 had this thing called EDMX. And it was a model for how the database worked, and it had a visual designer. EF Core uses a model, but it's a different model and it's not based on EDMX. So if you relied on that visual designer, that experience is not in EF Core, but there are solutions to migrate from that.
Got it. Cool. Let's see some demos.
Sure. Let me pop you onto, I first want to show this page. This is probably one of the easiest URLs, hopefully in the world, to remember, which is just simply AKMS EF Core 5. That is everything new in EF Core 5. Mm-hmm. And there's some major features. There's many-to-many. There's split queries. And I can go down the line. I'm not going to go into everything detail by detail. But what's nice about these is, for example, many-to-many, you could specify many-to-many relationships in EF Core 3, which was the previous version. But there were some limitations. And let's actually pop into some code and see what I'm talking about. So I prepared a demo right here, and I have a pretty simple set of classes. Mm-hmm. I have an attendee, so that's someone coming to the event. I have a session, so that's something being delivered at the event. This gets a little awkward. I'm going to be honest with you. If I was writing this and not worried about the database, I would probably have attendees have a set of sessions and mm-hmm. sessions have a set of attendees.
Right.
In EF Core 3, what you had to do is create this, what's called a join table. So you basically have this session attendee, which is a table that maps an attendee to a session and kind of links them on both sides. But the rest of this is just should be natural, feels fine, C-sharp code, right? So this data context, this conference context, this is how we interface our domain with the database. So I could have 500 C-sharp classes, but they're not really interesting to Entity Framework Core unless you tie them in through a DB context. Think of a DB context as a unit of work. It basically allows you to fetch some data. It'll keep track of that data for you. There's a change tracker built in that tracks changes to entities, and then you can update that data and sort of close out that transaction.
Right.
What I'm doing here is setting two constructors, one so I can inject options. A nice thing about data context is they're reusable so that I can use the same data context for my SQL database, for my Cosmos DB, for my MySQL, et cetera. And then this DB set is just telling it, hey, we're going to keep track of attendees and we're going to keep track of sessions.
Okay.
So that is it for my project. Let me just open the project file here. It's a pretty complicated project file. You can see the only reference I have is to Entity Framework Core. Now I'm using SQLite for a few reasons. It's very easy to demo. It's also cross-platform, so what I show you here on my Windows machine will also work on a Mac or a Linux machine.
Right.
And then having done that, that gave us the DB context. The only other thing we need to do is just give it a connection string. And the connection string for SQLite, I wish every database was like this. It's so simple. You just give it the name of the file that it's storing the database in.
Right.
And so you can see somehow dev intersection made its way into my code. So,
cool.
But let's walk through what we're doing. So I'm creating that context. Now this is the danger zone. I'd call this a code that you would never put in a production app, because we have different ways to manage database, especially relational databases. Schemas change over time, and you don't necessarily just swap, right? There's a migration path. You need to set defaults and things like that. So there's a whole set of steps around managing that. For a demo, though, I can just do this ensure deleted. So clean up any old data that I have, and then ensure created. And that will look at the model that I defined in my data context, and it will, or DB context, I should say, and it'll create the database to specification.
Mm-hmm.
So here I'm newing up some entities, pretty straightforward code. We've got myself, Maria, Anastasia, and there's two sessions, EF Core, what's new, and then one of my favorite topics is Silverlight. So I'm bringing that back.
Code never dies.
Yep. And then you can see these work attendees and bank attendees are over from a previous incarnation of the code. But what's important is that I'm basically mapping Jeremy and Maria to the EF Core session, Jeremy and Anastasia to the Silverlight session. And these entities I can new up, I can do whatever I would want in a typical C# program. If I want them to persist to the database or come out of the database, I have to interact with that data context or that DB context. So here I'm telling it we're adding all of these items. Uh-huh. And notice add range just takes a list of objects. So here I'm saying I've created these entities. I want you to add them. Notice I didn't new up any IDs or anything like that. We're going to let the database assign the ID. Then I save those changes. And then I have a little bit of a query. And here's one of the things I think a lot of people love about EF Core is the ability to use link for queries.
Yeah.
And so here's a link query, and what it's doing is it's basically saying, if we can get the help text out of the way, saying, look at the attendees. I want you to include that session pivot table. And that session pivot table then points to a session. So that's a little awkward, but it gets us there. And then I'm going to filter this to say the sessions that have the name EF Core session. So what this query does at a glance is it basically says, give me a list of contacts who are going to the EF Core session, and then include all of their sessions that they're going to.
Ah, okay.
Okay, and so here we define the query. Here we execute the query. And then here we're iterating through, and we're just saying attendee, attendee session, et cetera. So, I mean, pretty simple program. It's all fits in one file. And I'm not trying to start a trend. Don't build your enterprise applications in a single file, because there's a lot more code than what I'm showing. But let me go ahead and run this. And let's take a look at what comes out the other end of our program factory here. Dun, dun, dun. And that music I added on my own. It's not a feature of the software itself.
Oh, it should be, though, and you should be able to set the music to whatever you want.
Now, if we can actually get this screen to dock, that would be even cooler. There we go. All right, so it basically came through Jeremy session, EF Core, what's new, Silverlight, Maria session, EF Core, what's new. So it picked the two people who are in the EF Core session.
Right.
That's actually not what I want to show you at all. But that is what you could do with EF Core. Let me pop over really quickly to Visual Studio Code, because we embrace all IDEs. And what I'm going to do here in code is do Control-Shift-P, which is my command palette. And I've got this extension, SQLite Open Database. And what this will do for me is it'll open a SQLite database and let me inspect what's going on inside of it. So I'm going to come down here and go into our project and try to find our database. There it is. And then we'll open this up. And no folder open, SQLite Explorer. So this is the database it created. And notice there's a table for attendees, and we can actually click on this to see what the attendees list looks like. There it is over there.
Studio Code extension?
What's that?
This is a Visual Studio Code extension.
Yep, just look for SQLite in Visual Studio Code, and you can go right inside of the IDE. You can even write and run queries against it.
And who wrote this?
That's a good question. Let's take a look. We got our, one of these is extensions, this one. And then we can do SQLite. And then we can do that. And we'll close out the welcome window. So here it is, Alex CVZZ. So shout out to Alex for a cool extension.
Yep.
All right, let me go back and just close this because we're about to make some changes. So we'll close the database and let me come back. So here's one of the big features that's new with EF Core 5, and that is mini to mini. So I just showed you what mini to mini looks like. However, why is this thing all highlighted? Oh well, it's a mystery for another day. But one of the things I pointed out was this awkward join table that you had to have, right? Yeah. Which can be useful if you have information about that relationship. But if you don't, it just creates for an awkward programming model. So I'm going to do one of my favorite things to do, and that is just get rid of code. So I'm going to take this class, and I'm just going to chop it off. So it's gone. And in a second, we'll start getting these red squigglies telling me I've done something bad. But I'm going to make session a little more natural, and I'm going to take this session attendee and just make it an attendee. So now a session has a collection of attendees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to come here to attendee and just give it a collection of sessions. So we're getting rid of that weird pivot table altogether.
Yep.
So now these are good, but of course I've got problems up here because in this loop, we were going through this extra pivot table. So I don't need to include it. I can go to sessions directly. So that simplified the query for me. I'm not going from the session pivot table to the session to the name. I'm just going directly to the session name.
Yep.
So we can fix that. Then we've got this one, which is session session name. We can get rid of session session and just do what's natural, which is session dot name. And then up here, I get to basically chop off all of these, which means that I cut off all of these. See how this code is just getting easier and easier?
Yep.
And the only thing I'm missing now is I haven't shown that relationship. I've created attendees and I've created sessions, but I haven't shown that relationship between the two. So I'm just going to simply take this session and say attendees equals new list of attendee and give it Jeremy and Maria. And then down here for the Silverlight session, we'll do attendees new list attendee. And this time we'll do, I don't know why it keeps throwing that attendee in there, Jeremy and Anastasia.
Okay.
Okay. So super simplified code. In fact, this is a more natural way in my mind to show a relationship between sessions and attendees.
Yep.
So now we're going to cross our fingers. We've got no red, so it should be ready for production, but it has to build first, right? So let's hit F5 and see what happens. And I'm going to have to bring my screen back over, but that's okay. Dun, dun, dun. See that little jingle plays every time I run code. And there we go. So we got
way less code, way easier. And it's way kind of easier. More intuitive, because you would think that an attendee would have a list of sessions and a session would have a list of attendees just as a property.
Right. So
really intuitive.
Exactly. And so here's what's interesting about it. Let me just jump into SQLite and we're going to open that database again to see what it looks like now, because we changed our definition a little bit. Go to, by the way, is my font size readable?
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I always keep a big font, and I'm going to say it's for presentation purposes and not so I can actually see what's going on. All right. So here we go. And we've got attendees and sessions, and notice that it created the pivot table for us. So there is still a pivot table that maps, or a join table, I should say, that maps these two things together. It's just that it's implicitly created.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So Entity Framework Core supports something called shadow properties and shadow entities.
Mm.
A shadow entity is an entity like this join session that basically is tracked behind the scenes. So Entity Framework Core is aware of it, even if your application isn't. Shadow properties are pretty cool, because what shadow properties do is they allow you to map properties that you're interested in tracking, but probably more for the database side of things rather than the code side of things. So a great example would be a timestamp or a row version. That's a very common way to keep track of concurrency, right? So you put a timestamp and you update that, and if it changes, you know there's a conflict. Well, putting that on your class just because it's a thing that you use for the database might not make sense. So with EF Core, you can define that as a shadow property, and EF Core will keep track of it when you save and restore, but you don't have to have that property explicitly defined on your entity.
Very nice.
Which is pretty cool. The only other thing I'll show here is before we move on, because I want to talk to EF6. I don't have anything to demo for that, but there's some exciting things coming through for that. But we also added an easier way to do logging in EF Core 5.
Okay.
And it's always supported the existing like iLogger factory, iLogger, if you've worked with ASP.NET Core or other applications that use that. So that still is there, and you can use your app settings and tweak it. But if I'm doing something like this, a tight inner development loop, and I just want a quick and easy way to do logging, all I have to do is take this, and while I'm building out my options, I can say log to. And log to can be as simple as giving it something that takes a string, such as console write line. Or I can even do something like pass it an array of types of things I'm interested in logging. So I can tell it, I just want to see database information.
Okay.
Or I just want to see model building information, how it keeps track of its internal model. Let's just do this one simple change and take a look at what is happening behind the scenes when this runs. And I want to see if I can find something in the logs that ties into the changes that I made. So we are running now, and oh yeah. So now we're getting I will call a bounty, a plentiful amount of information. We'll put it that way. But let's go to the top. And we can't even make it all the way to the top. The window doesn't let me do everything. But look at this. This is actually perfect. The property attendees ID attendee session was created in shadow state because there are no eligible CLR members with a matching name. So what it's saying is it's still doing that pivot table. It's just doing it behind the scenes. but that came out through the logs. It's telling me about connection information. It's telling me about different events. It's even showing me SQL that it's using to create tables.
There you go.
When we query tables. And again, I can filter this to just look at the SQL if I want. But a lot of rich information stored there.
And that's handy if you are familiar with Transact SQL. It gives you the ability to confirm that the queries you're sending over are exactly what you want.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, we even have an overload now on linked queries called to query string. So you can do to string, but you can do to query string. And what will happen with to query string is it'll evaluate it as if it's about to run it and give you the actual SQL that that link's going to generate. So if I'm debugging, I can do that to query string, grab that, paste that into SQL, and test the query directly.
Very nice.
So there's several other changes. I encourage people to look at this, what's new. There's table per type. There's filtered includes. There's a filter include lets you, when you include other entities, actually perform another subquery on what's coming in from those related entities. So you know how I showed all the sessions for the contacts?
Yep.
I had session A, session B. I could say, just show me the session I'm interested in. But let's talk about EF Core 6 for a second. And this I will be demoing.
Okay.
So we'll have some releases out that I can show. But the big story of what's new, and we'll actually go to the high-level plan is a better place. And I'm in the EF Core documentation. And we have this releases and planning over here in the table of contents. And then you can go straight to all of our different versions. We document the plan, what's new, breaking changes. So everything's there for all of these versions. So if we look at the plan for 6, there's some pretty interesting things here. Let's go down. So temporal tables and JSON columns. These two are huge. So for those not familiar with temporal tables, those are like the built-in audit tables that have time information. And being able to support these allows you to say, I want to see what this table looked like on January 2nd, such and such date. And the mechanism to do that was not front and center for EF Core, meaning there wasn't a direct way to embed that in your model and work with it. So that's being added. The JSON columns is another big deal. JSON's a very popular and common format now. And databases now support storing not just as a text string of JSON, but actually a JSON that you can index and query and look up properties within that document. But this is the one I'm the most excited about, is performance.
Yeah.
And one of the goals, so if you've heard of Dapper, Dapper is a lightweight mapper, database mapper. Some people think of it as a competition with Entity Framework Core, but it's actually interesting because we work with the Dapper team and we see them as very complementary. In fact, there's a lot of customers, Stack Overflow, for example, they use Dapper and Entity Framework Core. So when they're doing something that's tracking changes and updates, they use the built-in change tracking and concurrency features of EF Core. If they're just doing a lightweight query, they're using Dapper. So one of the goals the team set was we want to have performance that matches Dapper based on the standard Tech Empower fortunes. And so we've been working on optimizations to the way we parse and translate and everything within the query pipeline to get as close to Dapper performance as possible. And the reason why is simply because if the only reason someone's adding Dapper is because they can get better performance out of the queries, we can save them a step for that.
Right.
Now, what's ironic about this process is that as we are improving the speed of EF Core, Dapper is also improving their speed. Which is great for everyone, right? So we have made some changes, and we were a week ago had a pull request queued up that would have taken us to 99% of Dapper. However, Dapper improved their performance by I think like 6%. So that took that PR down to 93%. but it's very, very close.
Yeah.
So it's a fun competition. Then we're doing some things internally with linking ahead of time compilation and compiled models, so that basically instead of at runtime, it looks at the data context and figures out the model. We can actually use source generators or other mechanisms to create the code of the model itself. Mm-hmm. As you change it, it just recompiles and it saves time for that. So those are some of the things that I'll be covering at Dev Intersection. But the goal here with EF Core is really just to make life easy for developers. So if you're checking out EF Core and you're hitting friction or rough spots, reach out to me, because I'd like to walk you through it, because it's supposed to make your life easier. And every feature we build is something to facilitate data access in a way that is just comfortable, natural, but also gives you performance and gives you that fine tuning that you need for that.
Right on. Well, this was awesome. Thanks a lot for this.
My pleasure.
So people can learn more by going to the Entity Framework docs. We'll have a link to that. They can, of course, learn more by coming and joining us either in person or virtually at Dev Intersection. Hope to see you there. And either way, we will see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.
Take care.